Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about nitrogen credits. And in our spotlight, we'll take a look at some precision ag software combining Microsoft and FFA. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the nitrogen cycle. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Well, we've been experiencing more typical fall weather this week. It's been a little bit cooler. We've getting some rain off and on. So, I mean, it's...
feels exactly like fall.
Right?
A little chilly in the morning. The grass is crispy.
Yeah.
Warms up during the day.
Football's going, which it feels a lot... feel a lot better watching football when it's cool.
When it's cool. Yeah. It's Bears week.
It's
so
Bears
we
week
gotta,
this week. Yeah.
It's a big week.
Stop Bears.
Stop Bears. Still suck. Hopefully, we'll see.
Well, they are, what, 4-4 or 4-5?
Four and five,
something like that.
So they just fired their offensive coordinator, so.
Oh, good. That's usually helpful.
They said he was unwilling to make in-game changes. I heard that this morning.
He would just be like, this is my plan.
Yeah, like, we're following the script.
Yep, like we're not going to make adjustments till halftime or after the game. It's like,
I want to use that in, like, in farming.
Yeah.
We're going to, like,
not make any
like
changes.
This year when
I'm
it
not
rained every
the
day,
crop plan.
Like, nope. Says it here. No in-season changes. We're just doing it.
Yep.
Then all the way.
We put the nitrogen out. It's there. It is what it is.
Yep.
We're going to play with what we got.
You're not switching crops. You're not like,
Todd,
this is the plan we made.
Then you will end up like the
right.
Bears offensive coordinator.
Be a terrible way to do it.
Fired.
No adjustments needed. It's perfect as is.
So imagine that if we stuck, like, if we did a plan, and like we do these plans in the winter and then we didn't change a thing. Like, that would
be
wild.
Have you ever had, like, I've got probably two farms that in general
don't
change, like that's what we decided and
that's what we're doing.
Right. Like
it's amazing.
The game plan's the game plan kind of. I mean, they, it's not zero changes though. There's, you know, a few increments here, there. Or
I think it's amazing how many people think we do that. Like, there is no change. Like, oh, yeah, no, we just do what we planned.
Right.
Yeah, everything always goes exactly as written. And then there's people that just assume that. And it's like, well, no, we can't. If we can't plant certain crops in a certain timeline, you got to adjust and either not plant. That's why prevent plant exists. Or plant something else.
Yeah. That would be frustrating in football. You spent all that whole week prepping for that team and making this game plan, and within the first drive, maybe,
apart.
Or first quarter, it's like,
different.
This is garbage. They had this figured out, and I got to change. And yeah, you'd think you would have to make
it. Yeah, it would be so much worse if you didn't. Like, nope, they picked off every pass we throw.
Right.
But just throwing
keep doing
it.
Well, and everybody,
they can't get them all.
You've heard enough people say, like, halftime adjustments are overrated. Like, we don't make, it's 12 minutes, right? By the time we get off the field,
sure,
they probably take a leak and then they get back and it's like, well, we can't do anything now because we got to go back out to the field. So you have to make, like, drive-by-drive adjustments,
right.
I'm
thinking
sure
how much time they've got now and how many offensive coaches there are in defense,
right.
And they got their little computers on the side. And like you say, when they're sitting over there, I'm sure they're showing them things like, okay, we're going to adjust here and here and try to make this work. And
nope, just always do always whatever you plan.
Work your plan and
work your plan.
Plan your work.
Plan your work.
Plan your work.
We're just gonna throw the ball. Nobody can catch. But why run the ball? We'll just keep throwing it. As that was the plan we came up with. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into our topic for today. So today we're going to talk about nitrogen crediting, because even after harvest is done, for most people, I think I saw an article the other day said 95% crop harvest is finished. And that might have just been corn, but either way, we're winding down. I mean, there's a few fields out there now that we've finally gotten some rain that are keeping some fields. I know there was one over by the county line between Outagamie and Brown County that I don't know if they chopped it or just started combining it and split the field, but then left the rest. So I can say with certainty there is still corn standing somewhere. But with the end of harvest, we've got to think about next year. We've got to think about our plan, what we're doing. And with that comes thinking about where our nitrogen is going to come from. And whether you're looking at manure, if you had soybeans in the rotation and you're going to credit your soybeans, if you're planting cover crops with the idea that maybe you'll save some nutrients and have some credits there, whatever the source, end credits can save you on purchasing fertilizer. And I found an article that I found very ironic, that it's a article from Purdue University quoting Larry Bundy from University of Wisconsin. But this article kind of talks about determining your nitrogen need, when you can credit, how much you should credit, different things, whether it's cover crops, manure, soil contributions, all that kind of stuff. And university is fairly clear on, like, soybean and manure credits. There's numbers you use, percentages. SNAP Plus, the program that we use for nutrient management planning, will basically kind of automatically account for some of those credits. And not that they're always exactly right, but
get you close. Know,
at least get you something to get an idea. But yeah, cover crop credits, which is kind of a newer thing that we think about and trying to determine, is a little bit more up in the air. So some things are harder to figure out than others, but in general, we know legumes and other things can provide us with.
Well, just think about the difference in, like, cover crop isn't a cover crop, right? Because the difference in growth is so.
Right. Was it planted
sporadic
in August after wheat? Was it planted in September after corn silage? Was it planted 3 days ago because we just finished harvest and now we're going to stick some rye in? So, yeah, what species are there? What kind of timing it was planted? All make that kind of difficult. But
one of the things to consider here is this word credit is. And I don't know that there's a better word, but it's slightly misleading, because credit assumes like there's something you're gaining there or that is given. And the more research they're finding on this, that there's even some work out of Wisconsin back in 2020 that kind of suggests that the soybeans maybe isn't like crediting it. It's just not, there's just not a penalty there from corn on corn.
Right. Sure.
So, like, that's odd. And, like, we've called it soybean credit for so long.
It's almost like a rotation effect.
Yeah. And we've called it rotation credit. Yeah. Even, and I like the word, I like that better, Bill, rotation effect. Because I think that is really what you're actually getting here, isn't necessarily this big flush of nitrogen that comes from a legume or, you know, right now, if you look at the RECs, it's very similar if you got corn on wheat and corn on soybeans. Well, wheat and soybeans are very different.
Right.
You know, one's a grass and one's a legume. So you'd think after, you know, corn on beans, there'd be this flush of nitrogen. And what they were kind of finding in some of this new research, that it wasn't like that. They were suggesting that it actually may deplete nitrogen when you have soybeans, which is odd to say. Like, it's not necessarily depleting it, but it's not necessarily like giving you it. It's just you don't have all that corn residue there, right, sure, as a penalty.
Yep.
So, you know, what's the opposite of credit? Maybe a discredit. So really you're just discrediting the corn stover part. So like you're saying, hey, if I have corn on corn, especially corn grain on corn grain, all that corn residue takes up and just, doesn't really even take up the nitrogen either, if that's the right way to say it. It's just the carbon to nitrogen ratio is a little off, and you maybe need a little bit more nitrogen in season to affect that. So we'll see.
The nitrogen is being used.
It's kind of being held, right. But there too, I just read some research this morning that said, you know, should you apply fall nitrogen on your corn stalks to break them down? And it basically said it really doesn't work quite like that.
Right.
Like you still need microbes to do it. Well, maybe in the spring at V2, V3 corn for next year, put that nitrogen there or early season to help break it down.
And maybe if we were in southern Illinois or Missouri, maybe there's more season. It's heat.
Correct.
You know, that would
work.
Yeah,
the way this read, you just need bugs to do their job. So you're right.
We don't have enough heat and time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe a better way to put it would be nitrogen accounting. So not you're looking at what source of nitrogen, and yeah, like you said, there's no penalty maybe. Because residue is a source of nutrients. It's just how fast it breaks down. Like, and we've talked about that before, too. The more residue you have, the longer it takes to break down, the higher potential of, or the higher carbon to nitrogen ratio means you're not going to see the returns immediately. Living cover versus dead cover in the spring is another thing with cover crops where, you know, if it's something that's going to overwinter, you would probably account for the nitrogen it holds differently than if it died through the winter, because then you may have lost the nitrogen because of the nitrogen cycle, you know, being what it is and, you know, cycling faster than you can take it up. But regardless of how you're sourcing your nitrogen or thinking about nitrogen, the first step is always figuring out what nitrogen you need. And I think that goes to what you were saying too, Todd, is it corn on corn? We know there's, you know, penalties to having corn on corn. Rotation makes things better. So figuring out what your crop needs are, whether you're using SNAP Plus, using some sort of testing, you know, soil, obviously we can do PSNTs, PPNTs, different types of nitrate testing to see what's available. But soil type and fertility matter too. If it's sandy soil versus heavy soils, you can account for some of these things differently. And organic matter is a big part of that too. And that kind of goes to soil type. But the other article I was reading, this one out of Minnesota, talking about accounting for nitrogen in the soil and how it applies to organic matter in particular, is essentially organic matter as it breaks down does release some nitrogen to the system. And this article called it at or about 20 pounds of nitrogen released per year per percent of organic matter. So if you have 2% organic matter, you got 40 pounds of nitrogen in a season. If you're at 3 or 4, then you're getting 60 to 80 units. And that's something that is somewhat naturally occurring, but it goes to that talking about residue breakdown and having that organic matter doing its job, the microbes doing their job. So in that way, accounting for nitrogen can be even more difficult, as if you're organic, you know, some guys are trying to build organic matter. We can lose organic matter with erosion and other things. Like, we have those numbers when we soil test, but at the same time, it's not something that I think we think about in how we account for nitrogen. It's more like that can be the background side of it.
Yeah, some of that with organic matter is hard because I would agree with Matt, that background word's a good one because it's sort of there. We want to credit it. We want to know what's coming from. I haven't heard the 20 pounds of N per percent, Bill. I mean, we've kind of heard that. Do you know of a range you've seen with that ever? Or?
No, I haven't seen a range, but I think that's pretty close. And that's why it's so important that we try to build organic matter, not just the fact of better water holding capacity and other things that organic matter bring.
Infiltration.
Right. Yep. But it's also, you know, look at the difference, what a 4% or 6% could do versus a 1% or 2% that we normally see. And reducing tillage is going to be another factor that's going to help.
That'd be a good one. Like, in general, think if you're at a 3% organic matter, like, that's okay. But what you'd get to bump it to 4, going from that 60 to 80 units, I mean, that could be a big deal in holding that and in that crop. This is obviously going to be very slow release. And
right.
So teaming it up with, you know, a commercial fertilizer that's fast release, you could get a really good product there. So did you guys see any, like, of these new biologicals versus organic matter? And if they're seeing, because that nitrogen we kind of similar, like a Pivot Bio or an Invita. Or Corteva's product that's escaping me.
Nutricia,
thank you. Yep. So those products would kind of mimic that, where like Pivot Bio is claiming 40 units. Well, that's 2% of organic matter kind of breaking down as
and
well.
And it's, again, slow.
Slow release.
You can't, right. You can't predict, is it 2 pounds today and 5 pounds tomorrow and nothing the next day? That's the hardest part with, I think, any of this breakdown, is you can't predict when it's going to, when it's going to be there.
Right. And that's, even with manure, we've always talked about, you know, that there's that day.
Manure day.
Manure day.
And corn just turns green, right?
When all of a sudden it's like, what happened? There's this magical change out in the field. But that's, again, based on your soils, your soil temperature in particular, like, when that mineralization cycle kind of,
yeah, I think that's
goes
when
through.
You see all your organic matter kick in. Yeah, right. Like you say, all your organic forms all of a sudden show up.
Right.
And
it's not June 20th every year.
No,
it's not, you know, May 1st either. So it makes it very difficult. We know these sources are out there. We know that they will release something, and they may not even release all at once.
Right. And we don't want them to. I think that's a good way to say it. That's why we supplement the N we do, and when we do, is that's why maybe having some at planting, you know, 2x2x2 is helpful, and a little bit early season to get it going till that organic N mineralizes. Then you have that to kind of, I don't, the best way I can say it is like your commercial fertilizer. I wouldn't even say it's like meals, because that's almost a bad way to say it in some, because you're getting a lot of N from organic sources too. But, you know, it's kind of like having snacks through the day to kind of get you by. And then you maybe have not a big lunch, so you just need a little lunch, but then you have snacks that are
just
the
need organic. Need a little granola bar.
Yeah. That the organic N's like every hour eating a granola bar, so you got a little bit to come. On that manure side, I like the word you got down, manure credit, and I think that is good, Matt. I think that you could use that word credit just fine. Like, it is a credit. It's adding to the system. You can credit it like you should. There is sort of additional units there. And as we get into alfalfa credit, I think that might be the same too as that. That's maybe where the word soybean credit started, was because we've always used alfalfa credit.
Right.
But I think alfalfa is a true credit, because you have that very high kind of C to N rate, or be low C to N ratio residue from alfalfa, and it sort of adds to the system. There is a true credit there.
Well, I think even when we look at certain cover crops like clovers and different things that are legumes, it's from what we've seen and what we can test, and not that we have a bulletproof idea of what these credits always are, even in the case of alfalfa and other things, where, you know, it could vary on how good of a stand it was, how long it was there,
how tall it was.
But that's what we're seeing when we're testing and doing other things, is the longer it has to establish, like in the case of a hayfield, you're hopefully getting at least 3 to 4 years out of a stand. So, I mean, it's a robust plant that's, you know, fully able to do its biological processes and do things. Whereas, if I grow alfalfa or clover or something, I plant it in the fall and I kill it in the spring, it's not the same. Like, that's, I'm not going to get the same credit as a fully established hay stand that's run the course of at least a couple of years. And so it's, like you said, we know there's a credit there. It's just how much. And we don't have the bulletproof answer for it, but I don't think it's important to go back to a word that you used before, Todd. It's important not to discount these sources of nitrogen and to just assume they won't be there. Because even if you don't, you may not get the full, you know, what is 120 credits from a well-established hayfield, I think is kind of what they say you get, somewhere in the 90 to 120. Even if you're not getting all of that, you're probably still getting something.
Yes, for sure you're getting something. And it's that one you can usually bank on. It's not going to leach away. Like, there is going to be something there. So those you do want to kind of watch. That's where a PSNT can be helpful.
Yep.
A nitrate test in corn to see what kind of free nitrate you got there in that soil system, just, you know, that's there to feed that crop. I know, Matt, you've done some of the cover crop.
Yep, the biomass
test. Have you seen that it is a good test to show what's there? Have you seen it's got some work yet because it's a newer test? Where is that test at?
It's good to show what's there. The hard part is, so like recently I had a farm that planted wheat, frost-seeded clover, took the wheat off, really good stand of clover. Clover's, you know, when I stood it up tall because it was lodging, you know, almost probably 24 to 30 inch
holy
tall.
Holy man, like, that's huge.
Tall clover.
Like right now, like in the fall?
Yes. Yeah. Like right now, it's
perfect.
It's at that.
Perfect spring for frost seeding, and it rained all the time, so
now
got
we're
established well, I'm sure.
We took a sample this fall, and we'll do it again in the spring, but there was almost 200 units of nitrogen in a 2x2 area of those plants, so lots of nitrogen there. The question is now, how fast is it going to break down once it's dead? Yep. When will that become available? And
did you kill the clover, or is it still growing?
It is still alive now. It will... it's red clover, so it should overwinter, and we'll kill it in the spring sometime, depending on, you know, what kind of spring we get. But yeah, and so we'll take another sample in the spring, and we'll probably take soil test in the spring to see, you know, what can we account for from these credits. But yeah, it's good for telling you kind of what's there, but you don't know where it's all going to go.
Right.
What's going to potentially volatilize out of the residue, what's going to soak in, what are the roots doing? Because we know legumes in particular, whether it's soybeans, alfalfa, there's some deposition into the soil in the way of nodules, and those break up. So we can't really tell you a solid number, but in general, if you were looking at clover the way you look at alfalfa, because guys used to grow clover for seed and different stuff, I think the number I've seen is like 20 to 40 units of a pretty decent stand. It could be more even, but you know, you can get a pretty good credit from it. So we'll, and then the other thing with credits too, and what we're kind of doing in some of these cases is we'll assume a credit, fertilize accordingly, and then watch the plant through the season. And if it looks like it's the case that we might need more, and you can't always do these rescue applications, but you know, if we plan out split applications, we can add to those split applications if we feel like maybe we didn't see it, or we do some tests and hey, we're not really seeing it. And I think that's where the PSNTs come in. We do a lot of those in a year, and especially manure fields, sometimes the PSNT will come back like there's nothing there, but we don't discount the alfalfa credit, we know, or the manure credit, we know it's going to show up at some point. It just isn't available with the day we took that test.
Wait a week.
Right.
Come back again. Try it again. You're probably going to find it at some point. You just got to pick that nitrogen day, right, like we talked about?
Yep. So you have to be willing to do the work and to accept that there is potentially a credit there. And once we get enough guys that are, you know, trying this out and figuring it out and enough research behind it, we could probably get to a point where we can better credit things. But that's part of this testing, is at least trying to see, you know, what was there to begin with. Now we got to figure out what can we expect to be left behind. So there you go. Some things to think about as you're planning your nitrogen needs. And another thing, too, that I guess I wanted to mention before we completely wrap up is, so in a year where you're looking at fertilizer potentially being higher, and we don't know what it'll do in the spring, but if that's another where another spot you can kind of feel more comfortable on those hay fields and other places, maybe notching back a little bit because you know there's going to be something there, as opposed to, you know, your corn on corn ground where you probably need to be a little bit more covering your bases. So, all right, with that, we'll move into our spotlight for today. So, using precision agriculture with Microsoft and FFA's Farm Beats for Students. Precision agriculture is something that we talk about a lot and becoming important for farms across the country, but it's also creating new opportunities for agriculture students. So, National FFA Organization and Microsoft are featuring Farm Beats for Students, a program that can help ag teachers integrate precision ag technology into their classroom. Microsoft Program Manager Ankur Anand says the ag industry is continuing to evolve. It's about using new technology, including data science, AI, and hands-on learning to bring concepts to the classroom. The goal is to help students understand these basic technology fundamentals that they can use in precision agriculture. The project started in 2019 and continues today. So, the DePere FFA chapter here in Wisconsin utilizes that technology.
Ooh, we know the...
Know the egg teacher.
Shout out to Mr. Wolf.
Yeah.
So the project is important because as we lose farmland, but our population is growing, coming years it's important to utilize technology and maximize potential of the land and to grow as much product and food as we can. This is a great basic introductory course for students to learn how to do that. So something they can continue on in their career. I know the tech schools and stuff too have different programs they work on to introduce people to the idea of precision agriculture. So it's kind of neat that these collaborations and programs are out there. So now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So since we were talking nitrogen cycle, might as well, or nitrogen credits, might as well talk about the nitrogen cycle. So about three decades after it was discovered that living plants needed nitrogen, Jules Reset recognized in 1856 that decaying organic matter releases nitrogen. This discovery ultimately provided the basis for the nitrogen cycle, because it was the first evidence of nitrogen cycling in the biological sphere. Next advances were with respect to the role that microbes play in converting N from one species to another. In short order, the process of nitrification, biological nitrogen fixation, and denitrification were discovered. The process of nitrification was discovered in 1877 by Theophile Schlesing and Achille Muntz through their experiments with sewage water filtered through a mixture of sand and limestone. 1886, Ulysses Gayon and Gabriel Dupetit officially discovered the process of denitrification after isolating two strains of denitrifiers. So by the end of the 19th century, the basic building blocks of the N cycle had been discovered. The species, their reactions, and how reactions connected to a cycle that converted N2 to reactive N forms and then reconverted back to N2. So even though there's, you know, we've discovered more to it over the years, that's still something that we have to pay attention to and affects not only nitrogen but sulfur and other things too.
Good work on those names, Matt. Those are quite the...
French, yes. And German.
Theophile
Schlesing.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's very easy. All you need to do is search Tilth Talk Radio on your iPhone in Apple Podcasts or on your Android phone. Download an app like Podcast Addict, and there you can search Tilth Talk Radio and find us. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. go to tilthag.com/podcasts. And please follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now it's time for Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. Corn exports. Rocket ship to where? Well, corn export sales have been extremely strong in the past month. Weekly sales have exceeded 2 million metric tons.
Yay.
Or roughly Let's go. 79 million bushels in each of the four weekly USDA Foreign Agricultural Service export sales reports. On 15 of the 23 business days in October, USDA announced sales activities for corn that exceeded the reporting threshold of 100,000 metric tons, or 3.9 million bushels, to a single destination country in a day. So since November 1st, USDA has announced five more of these so-called flash sales, suggesting a wave of export activity has yet to break. So that's pretty cool. And it's obviously not going just to one place, because like I said, there's these flash sales of individual locations buying it. So hopefully that continues. Mexico has been a major buyer of the corn in recent weeks. So corn's got to go somewhere. Glad to have a place for it to go. So that's definitely good news. In our That's Corny this week, the American Farm Bureau Federation is terminating Illinois Farm Bureau membership after a dispute. So according to AFBF President Zippy Duvall, he said the decision goes into effect December 20th. Could have a big impact on farmers in Illinois. So American Farm Bureau Federation has expelled Illinois Farm Bureau from its membership status following a November 12th vote from the American Farm Bureau Federation Board of Directors. Decision goes into effect, like I said, the 20th. In response, Illinois Farm Bureau has filed a lawsuit. In a statement, the Illinois Farm Bureau President Brian Duncan said the lawsuit is intended to hold AFBF accountable and protect our membership. So the conflict comes from the fact that of the approximately 400,000 Illinois Farm Bureau members, only an estimated 78,000 are farmers. Discrepancy from these numbers can be attributed to the Illinois Farm Bureau's affiliate business, Country Financial. The insurance company was founded in 1925 and has been requiring all policyholders to sign up for IFB membership to become eligible. In September, Country Financial announced this eligibility requirement would be dropped beginning January 1st, 2025. The IFB and Country Financial have the same board of directors, which includes the current President Duncan. IFB's inability to get this policy reinstated was the reason for the conflict between the American Farm Bureau Federation and Illinois Farm Bureau Federation. So, yeah, interesting. It's not too often you see an entire state getting
Yeah, on Bears Week, this is good. Have Illinois just, yeah. Especially Illinois is a very big agricultural state. Like,
right.
That's sort of it crazy, and that they couldn't get this figured out with how the dues work or who's in or out. I mean, in a lot of clubs, there is that sort of, you know, an affiliate role or a sponsorship or a supporting kind of member and an actual member. You know, there's always been that sort of difference. So it sounds like the dispute's in there, and I'm sure it's a big one on both sides, that if they can't figure that out and they got to kick them out, then you know this got kind of bad and nasty.
Right. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to. They don't really have a farmer's perspective necessarily. It's more kind of the higher level stuff in this article, but, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the individual farmers think of that decision. But, yeah, I know here in Wisconsin, I think it's Rural Mutual Insurance is kind of the Farm Bureau insurance.
Oh, okay. Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Because I forget how it works, but yeah, that was, even though we didn't live on the farm, my dad was still a Farm Bureau member and had their insurance for a while. I don't remember if they still, like through retirement, if he still does or whatever, but I know that was the case at one time. So,
hopefully they can get it figured out. They let him back in maybe.
Right, but they have until December 20th to kind of get it settled, I guess. So All right. We'll wrap things up with our Feel Good Friday. So with Veterans Day being this past week, Kubota has partnered with the Boot Campaign to support veterans. In honor of those who served, Kubota Tractor Corporation today announced a partnership with the Boot Campaign to support the organization's work to restore the lives of veterans and military families through individualized life-improving care. Company kicks off its program this past Monday on Veterans Day with a series of activities that will run through Military Appreciation Month in May of 2025. Through a series of internal and customer-facing efforts, Kubota aims to support the Boots campaign mission to provide personalized care for veterans and their families, treat the root causes of hidden wounds of war, and to ease stress and financial strain, as well as produce quantifiable, long-lasting, and life-changing results year-round. So, it's a neat thing, a positive thing for, you know, there's farmers that are military veterans, but there's also other folks out there that always seem to need some sort of help when they come back from their military service, whether they served overseas or here at home. So it's good to see that kind of support for our veterans. And that'll do it for this week. So thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
Today we talked about nitrogen crediting and how to consider cover crops, manure, soybeans, alfalfa, all those kinds of things when planning for your manure, your end needs next year. The spotlight, we took a look at Microsoft and FFA teaming together to focus on precision agriculture. History Minute today, we talked nitrogen cycle. Cool beans this week was corn exports are rocketing right now. That's Corny was the fight between Illinois Farm Bureau and the American Farm Bureau Federation. And our Feel Good Friday was Kubota partnering with the Boots campaign to support veterans. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.